But this is Fish and Frank, and we're broadcasting from the wonderful, exquisite Charlotte Harbor Studios, the massive place. Our studio audience is out here. Everything is going on today. I got to tell you, what a thing. Are we going to, let's see, I can't even imagine what's going on. Captain Kale, you're here today, and the crowd loves you, buddy. They really
thank
do.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, Captain Kale, our fishing instructor, charter boat captain guy, and what a day to be here. Our studio audience is going great. So, anyway, we're back. We're going to be talking about, what, cobia?
And cobia, tarpon, shark, everything that's running hot down here in this area. Summertime is a great time to fish in Florida.
I mean, we've got a little bit of stuff going on. I'm just being told that, you know, I got to back off a little bit. I'm getting excited. Had to work on it. Cobia is a great fish. It's kind of like a cross between a shark and a catfish. It's all bad attitude. Yeah. It's got crazy stuff, and they're amazing to catch.
Amazing, amazing fish to catch. It took me 12 years to catch my first one. It can be a very, very elusive fish.
Hey there, this is Fish and Frank, and we're back with Captain Kale. Robert will be joining us in a little while. We're going to start off talking about cobia. Now, I'm not sure how many of you actually know what a cobia is, but cobia is crazy amount of fun. They rip the drag off. They're just going nuts.
Tough fish. They're so strong. They've had tagged cobia circumnavigate the globe, so they can tolerate a wide variety of water quality, temperature, salinity, and any fish that spends its entire lifetime swimming is a good fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a great aerobics program. This fish is going to get out there and just literally swim its entire life. And they spawn many times over the course of the year. This isn't just a once and done, so it's one of the most prolific fish in the water. I mean, I think second only to mahi-mahi. They're actually growing them in pens because they grow so big, so fast. And, I'm not sure what's going on. Anyway, we're talking about cobia. Big, big fish. I mean, these things get up in the 100-160 pound range. You can find them anywhere in the world in salt water. Yep. Now, you've had a cobia curse, Captain Kale.
I had a 12-year cobia curse. It took me 12 years of trying. Okay, and the bad thing was, to add insult to injury, is I could take my clients out and catch them, and then I would go out and I couldn't do it.
You couldn't do it?
I couldn't do it.
Okay. Well, here... Yeah, I want to make this clear. You were going out, taking people on charters. Your charter people were catching fish.
Yep.
Now, you took your wife down here right by the bridge one day because the cobia were hot and heavy.
Right, we were actually fishing the bridge for cobia bait.
Right.
We got some good old stinky shrimp. We were going to go catch some whiting, which is like cracked a cobia here in Charlotte Harbor. And she threw out a big rotten shrimp on the bottom, and her reel just took off. And she catches a cobia while we're fishing for cobia bait.
Okay. Now, this is 11 years and some odd months into it.
Yeah.
And this was supposed to be your day to catch a cobia. Just didn't happen.
It was Father's Day.
You should be allowed to catch cobia on Father's Day. She throws out a chunk of shrimp.
Did she at least have the common courtesy to pass off the rod?
No. So... You pack up, you go home.
I go home. I'm done with cobia.
All right. So now you're doing a favor for a guy.
For one of the guys that worked here at the shop. He was leaving for boot camp. Wanted to take his mother tarpon fishing before he left for boot camp. And we planned a night tarpon charter. Went out to one of our markers here to get white bait to fish for the tarpon.
So you're out there with a cast net. You're getting ready to throw.
Getting ready to throw on the marker, and there's dozens upon dozens of cobia swimming around that marker. So I'm there to get white bait.
Now, what he's talking about is a 3 to 5 inch bait fish.
Yep.
And we take a cast net, we throw a little bit of chum in the water, and then we throw the cast net on top of them and using those for bait. But now here you already have all the cobia, and the conundrum is, if you throw the cast net, the cobia are all going to leave.
Right. Right. So we can't throw the cast net. So
and you have no bait on the boat.
No
yet,
bait on the boat.
Because you need to throw the cast net to get the bait.
Correct.
So what does a charter captain do in these circumstances?
Well, I contemplated jumping on the cobia and wrestling them.
Wrestling them would have been a good idea.
I went through the boat and grabbed every piece of plastic, whether it be a hard bait, crankbait, artificial lure. It didn't matter. I threw everything at them. They wanted nothing to do with it.
Some days it's like that. Some days you just don't want to chase your food.
Right.
For them to hit a lure, they got to want to chase it.
And I even called Robert, who will be joining us here shortly, and told him, I said, this is how bad my curse is. I'm looking at 50 cobia swimming around a marker, and I can't catch one. And I knew if I threw the net, I would spook the cobia, but I had to risk it. Threw the net. I come back with two pieces of bait. Two.
And sure enough, unos, dos, right. Enough. Ein, zwei.
It spooked the cobia.
They left.
And again, okay, that's my curse. Suck it up and take it.
You got two pieces of bait and no cobia.
Two pieces of bait, now no cobia. And so I set up to get bait again. Luckily, those cobia came back up, put on a piece of bait, threw it out there, and the curse was finally broken.
So You hooked them up, but the rest of the story kind of goes odd because now you've got a thing. You've got your cobia hooked up. Andrew's calling you because you're supposed to be taking him and his mother
right.
out.
Where are you?
Where are you?
You're not at the dock.
You're not where you said you were going to be.
Right.
And you had to tell him, well, listen, I'm fighting a cobia.
Yep.
How long did the fight last?
About 45 minutes.
So you got 45 minutes invested in this fish.
Yep.
You get it up next to the boat. The cool thing about a cobia is they go racing out away from the boat, and they'll strip 50, 100, 150 yards of line.
Yeah, and just when you think that you've got them done, they see the boat and they're gone.
And
they take off.
They come back up and they haul out. Then they come back up and then they go out.
Back
out. I think the worst thing for me is what they do next. And they get out and they hang 20 feet off the side of the boat.
And won't move.
And you bring them in 5 feet and they go back
right
out
back
25
out 20.
And then
yep.
come back to 20.
Yep.
And they pick a spot where they're just going to hang out there. We're talking cobia. We've been talking about this fish at 45 minutes to land this fish on normal 10 to 20 pound rod,
yeah.
4,000 size reel,
sure.
15 pound test braid, maybe 20, and normal, just like you'd use for bass or snook, redfish,
sure.
nothing
yeah.
extraordinary on the
nothing
tackle,
big.
Because you don't have it right there.
Right.
If you get them hooked up, you were using a little bit heavier, a 25-pound class rod. That's why it only took 45 minutes.
Right.
If
right.
you get them on a bigger, lighter setup,
you're
talking hours.
You're going to be there a while.
And the worst part about it is they make that huge run, and they're just peeling line up. And it's crazy amount of line.
Definitely. It's worth it, though, in the end, because they're phenomenal eating.
But
phenomenal.
You got to get them back. And
you
get them back up to
first.
The boat. Never, ever, ever tighten your drag the first time you see a cobia come to the boat.
No.
This fish is coming up, and he's been just playing. That run was just playtime.
Right.
Until he sees the boat, he's not sure what's going on.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
he comes up, sees the boat, goes, oh,
got to get out of here.
This is not where I want to be. And he makes another
big run.
And if you've got your drag locked down, you just broke the line, you broke the leader, you pulled the hook, something happened, but you didn't, you're not, you just lost the
it's
fish.
It's going to go south from there.
You got to back your drag down. When he comes up to the boat the first time, put your fingers against the reel, start loosening the drag, hold the drag pressure with your fingers, because as soon as he hits it, boom, he's going to take off. Point that rod at him. Just let him run. Let him take that, 75, 80, 100 yards of line till he stops. Once he stops again, now you're going to start fighting him. But he's not coming all the way back to the boat again.
Right.
And the second time he comes up, he's going to go back out. The third time he comes back up, he's going to go back out. Now, what don't you do when a cobia comes next to the boat for the first three or four times?
Don't try netting him.
Landing nets do not work.
No.
What happens?
Landing nets don't even slow cobia down. They will go right through a brand new net.
And what's fun about it is you put this landing net in the water, you get all this mesh in the metal ring, and all of a sudden, just like in the circus, whoop, right through.
But right through the hoop.
What's even worse now is now your cobia is through the landing net, so you're holding the landing net trying to keep the rod up, the line's going through the hoop, through the broken mesh.
And now, not only are you battling what we've been telling you about the cobia, now you're doing it with a net. Now you've got to bring the net down the rod, cut it open, get it over the reel. And you're
that's
making,
the most fun part. I always
you're making it. Life worse than it already needs to be, and it already is, trying to catch a big cobia.
And then all of a sudden now, and you can't get it back over the end where the fish is. So
no, that doesn't work.
You got to literally bring it over the rod, try and cut more of it out.
Yeah, that's all you can do.
It is an amazing fire drill.
Yes, it's a Chinese fire drill on a boat.
Yeah, everybody's running back and forth, and now what do I do with the net? Now I got this coming over. It finally gets over the rod and reel, and now you're back to fighting the fish. And this fish just hangs out there. And I don't know what makes them hang out quite that far, but they'll just go round and round the boat, right outside 20 to 30 feet away.
I think it's because they're a hosting fish. They follow bigger objects. They'll follow big stingrays. They follow sharks. They follow whale sharks. And I think they do that because of their nature. They're safe behind that shark. They're picking up scraps from that shark eating. And that's why you'll find them underneath your boat. They're essentially hosting next to your boat. Well, this cobia came to host off your boat, and then all of a sudden it put a hook in its lip and started pulling on it. So it's kind of skeptical about how safe it's going to be near that boat. And I think that's why they don't want to come too close.
And patience is the key to landing this fish. Now, great point about...
And forearms.
And forearms.
Patience and good forearms.
Patience, good forearms. But patience is real critical, because as soon as you think you got him, you start pulling too hard, you're going to lose that fish.
Absolutely.
Now, the whole hosting thing where they hang out behind these big fish, yep. This is key to understanding how to fish them. Bright, sunny, calm day out there. The best place in the world to look for a cobia?
Underneath your boat.
Right under it. I mean, right, we're talking, it's looking for the shade. It comes up, hangs out under your boat. So you put a rod in the rod holder, put a good size bait on it. Now, I'd recommend like a 25-pound class rod, 5,000, 6,000 series reel.
A dual drag reel.
Yeah, bait runner,
well, that's the
live
key,
liner,
dual, drag
dual drags.
Yep.
And put it in and put it right in the holder and let the line go straight down next to the boat.
And if you don't have a dual drag reel, a normal spinning reel with a drag very loose will work better. Because you don't, if he hits it with only 3 feet of line out and the rod's in the rod holder and you're not paying attention, at best he's breaking the line. At worst, you're going shopping for a new rod.
Because you think that rod holder's strong. It is until you have a 90-pound fish hit it 3 feet off the boat green.
Right.
And then they've
ripped rod holders out of the boat.
Oh, absolutely.
Usually it's the rod handle that snaps, and now you're looking for a new rod and reel because it just went in the drink behind the cobia.
Yeah, it's all so much fun. But how you do this is I like using 50-pound braid, usually 40 or 50. 30-pound braid's pretty weak because it's not hard to pull 30 pounds. You get a big fish, he puts his head out.
Yeah, you can overdo it.
You can overdo it. So I'm a little heavier on the braid. It's straight down. I'm using 40 to 60-pound fluorocarbon leader. I've got it 2 feet below the surface of the boat, right next to the boat, because that's the most likely place to catch this fish.
Absolutely.
It's crazy because everybody's scanning the surface, looking everywhere for them, and stick your head out over the side of the boat, lean over it, and look underneath the boat. That's usually where you're going to find them. And the best way to catch cobia is not to fish for them.
Right. Go fish for shark. Go fish for tarpon. Go fish for big stingray, as silly as it sounds. They will, a lot of times, pick up your shark, tarpon, and cobia baits. A lot of times, they will just automagically appear underneath your boat.
Automagically.
Automagic.
Well, that brings you back. You can hire Kale to go out in your in his boat, and he takes you out fishing and catch your fish, and you do all that like normal. But if you bring a boat with you, all you've got to do is call Kale. He goes on your boat with you.
Absolutely. Go on your boat with you. Harbor Tours, Fishing 101, both inshore and offshore.
And he can take you out, show you where to go, what to do, how to get acclimated to this Florida fishing. And it's a lot of fun. It's really interesting. Hey there, this is Fish and Frank, and we're back. And we have Robert in the chair across from me, Fish and Frank here in this chair. And we got Captain Kale in the middle seat. And it is one heck of a day to be on the radio. It is, everything's been kind of going on. Robert, we've been talking cobia. What's your take on cobia?
They are an absolutely incredible fighting fish. I mean, they are underrated. Both for fight and for food a lot of times. But they're also found in all the oceans, too.
But now, Kale, a cobia only has one person, one purpose, rather. That's to be in the water and then
to the same with all fish.
No. Kale has one saying. A cobia only has one purpose. It's in the water that it's in my belly.
Yeah, in the belly.
In the belly. Okay. I know I should have fed you that. We should be doing this a little more up to date, but you know, that's just the way it goes here. And let's see. Oh, I even learned how to do that. Oh, look at that. Anyway, I was trying to do it. Ain't working, but that's okay. Anyway, we've talked about when I'm coming up. Let's talk about tackle form. What kind of leader? I'm thinking 40 to 60 pound fluorocarbon. And what bait?
You usually use 40 to 60 pound either fluorocarbon or monofilament. I know a lot of the older guys love that fluorocarbon. Today's new monofilament leaders, the only benefit fluorocarbon gives you is if you're fishing in clear salt water.
Gin clear water,
yeah. We don't have a whole lot of clear salt water here inside our harbor, so I'm usually using monofilament.
The benefit of fluorocarbon is it bends light exactly the same way as water, so it literally becomes just like a hole
almost
in the water.
Pretty
much invisible to fish. And if you're out there and you're spending all the money to get to
Florida,
a hole in
the water's a boat.
Yeah, that you throw money into.
Right.
But if you spend all the money to get to Florida, you're down here and all that, I think a few extra bucks in a fluorocarbon leader just to kind of get you a little bit more hits is a great idea.
Yeah, anything now, that's going to give you a little bit more edge, you know.
Blue crabs, ladyfish, pinfish, shrimp, sugar trout,
whiting.
Now, should they be live or whole? Should be live or cut,
all
dead,
the above.
Cut.
All the above.
They are pretty much, they're kind of like a garbage can. You know, when they're hungry, they will eat just about anything that's around them.
Yep. All right. Now, I've
catfish
had
are a phenomenal bait for them. Whole.
It's true. Whole live catfish.
Or catfish tails.
Chunks of catfish.
The one thing you do have to watch with our catfish, have spines in them. So
yeah, they'll put you in the hospital.
It's not just that, but you have to watch how the cobia eats them. The cobia will actually come up and bite the spines off of a bigger catfish before he eats it.
Really?
So you have to kind of wait for that fourth hit, because the first three hits are just him breaking off those spines.
Now, I'm sorry, I was taking a sip of my coffee there. So you got three little pecks, and then your hit.
Bang.
How long between these pecks? I mean, is it peck, 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 or is it...
Honestly, it depends on how lively that catfish is and how clear the water is. If the water's clear and that catfish is part dead, he'll bite them off pretty quick because he doesn't have to go back and find it.
Right. Now, what happens... I'm using, with a whole live catfish, probably about an 8-aught hook.
Yeah, 8-aught circle hook.
Yeah, I hate circle hooks. Circle hooks is some kind of communist invention to ruin the moral fiber of this country.
You're absolutely right. It's Russian for catches fish.
Well, yeah, but not only that with circle hooks, unfortunately, I mean, you have to mention brands and be specific, because circle hooks aren't standardized the way J hooks are.
No.
You know, so one company's 8-aught is another company's 12-aught is another company's 4-aught.
Right.
You know, so.
And not only will your size differ, but the gap between the point and the shank of the hook can vary greatly.
Right.
And see, that's important when you're putting a big bait on.
Absolutely. And I'm kind of more along the lines with Frank. I would prefer a J hook over a circle hook. You know, circle hooks have their pros and cons, but.
I have a hard time getting a bait on a circle hook because I got to put it up in and then turn it back out right away. I can't hide it properly.
Right.
With a J hook, I can thread it in there a little bit more. And I'm not sure what that just meant, but I think we're about out of time, but I'm not really sure. I got some dots on my communication board, and I don't read Morse code very well. There we go. We're getting back. I was wondering what that was. Anyway, when you're putting the hook, I like to hide the hook inside of my bait. I like having most of it in. With a circle hook, it's pretty much a just clip in and bring it back out thing.
Right.
You have more of your hook exposed. And it is nicer because it does hook the fish in the lip. But then I got a problem getting them out. I can't get a circle hook out of a cobia to save my butt. And for a shark, forget it. I'm not reaching down there and going through all that.
Well,
I either want a pair of bolt cutters or something.
I look at it this way. If it's over 33 inches to the fork, I'll take that circle hook out after I take the fillets off.
Oh, after you take the flay off.
Right.
Yeah, okay. What if it's 32-inch? Well, 32-inch cobia I can handle, and they got to be 33 to the fork to be legal. So, you know, I enjoy the cobia fishing, and I think they're a spectacular fish. Fished out in Charlotte Harbor or down in Florida, Gulf of Mexico, pretty much anywhere that hasn't had a cobia do something crazy to them.
So there's a lot of fishermen out there that have been outsmarted by dumb cobia.
Yes. So, anyway.
I was one of them for a long time.
It took 12 years to get over that. What's funny is how your customers would catch them, how everybody else would catch them.
His mother.
His mother.
My mother,
yes.
My wife.
Everybody.
You name it.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes I think the fish gods got to really try and test you to see if you're worthy.
You've got to earn your bones.
And this is Fish and Frank in the chair. Today, I'm operating, and we have Robert in the chair across from me. He's back, and we have Captain Kale banging his head on the microphone. So, life is good, and we're here. So, what's up, guys? We were talking about cobia and all that.
Cobia.
Let's go. I want to take just a minute to talk about the charters. If you come down right now, and somebody's hiring you for a charter, what are you going to go fish for right now?
Tarpon are real heavy in the harbor. And in our rivers, so that's a good prospect early in the morning.
So how many have you caught in the last few days? You've been just going tarpon crazy in the last few days.
When we talk tarpon, we talk about jumping tarpon and landing tarpon. Jumping a tarpon is just almost as much an accomplishment as landing one. You lose so many.
Yeah, we don't do like the goofballs out there. We don't count the whole, you grab the leader, you caught the fish. That's ridiculous. We cut by how many do you jump and how many you actually get to release.
Yeah, but in the last 4 days, we've jumped probably close to 30 fish, and we've gotten four to the boat, which shows you why we count jumping and catching, because your ratios.
You got to have to count something.
Your
you
got to
count something.
There, yeah.
You're out there, and the problem is when this fish skyrockets, you've got to get that line slack. I mean, without the slack in the line, you're just not going to.
Right. We call it bowing to the king. Another name for tarpon is the silver king. And when they jump up in the air, and you're doing this for any jumping fish, bowing to him, dropping the tip of that rod and giving him some slack allows him to complete that jump without extra pressure. If he jumps and you rear back on it, he's going to flip around that line. He's going to snap things off. He's going to spit hooks out. And you're going to watch him swim away.
So, now, tarpon is something you're going to do. You're going to go out and try for sharks out there. You've been doing a lot of shark trips this year.
Yeah, after the tarpon, because the tarpon bites first thing in the morning, and it may only last 5 minutes. It may last an hour and a half at best. After that, we're probably going out into the harbor and looking for shark and cobia. Plenty of sharks in the harbor. We're a big nursery. These big sharks come in. They lay their young. We've got lots of big sharks and little sharks out here at the same time, so you can go after big sharks with heavy tackle, you can go after light sharks with light tackle, and it's a whole lot of fun.
So, all right, you're going to head down, and you go out, you find your tarpon, and then you take off and you go up. What's a shark trip like? What goes on out there when you're doing these sharks?
A shark trip can be periods of boredom punctuated by extreme chaos.
Really?
Yeah. You're going to get out there, you're going to get set up, you're going to get your chum slick going, you're going to get your baits out there. You may wait half an hour for the first.
Robert, what goes on at this time of year for you? Kale going out, and we're going to talk a little bit more shark charters. What's your thing this time of year?
Well, this time of year, you've got quite a bit of varieties of stuff. Not only do you have your tarpon and your shark and your cobia, but if you go out towards the beaches out along the barrier islands, the snook fishing is absolutely one of the best that I think I've seen in a long time.
Now, I'll say that's good, but I'm going to say up here in the canals, the snook fishing is unreal. 30 to 40-inch fish. Some guys are catching them 42, 46 inches.
Right.
I mean, we're going to break a state record here pretty soon, because, I mean, you can call and you can get a boga grip. You can send it. The Boga Grip's a fish lip tool. You can actually send that to IGFA and get it certified and break a record with it. And I think we're going to see some snook records broken this year with the Boga Grips.
I think it's very possible, absolutely.
I mean, I've never seen so many big snook coming around. How's the permit been doing down here?
The permit offshore, if you know where to go, have been absolutely incredible. But the problem with the permit out there is this year they're actually hopscotching around a little bit from one reef to another, except for a couple isolated spots.
Pegasus, and what's the other one? Mohawk.
Mohawk, Pegasus.
Mohawk, the Pegasus are doing well. You get out there on
Mary's Reef, the Palm Island Ferry.
Yeah, see, we were on the same page with that one.
Yeah,
so we got reefs
they
with
like
permit on.
They like artificial structure, too. A lot of people try to find some of the natural reefs, and permit are really, really associated with artificial structure over anything else.
Well, I can tell you, fish, I mean, people build better structures in nature. Well, that's why we don't live in caves, you know.
Imagine that.
I mean, you know, caves are cool, but I'd rather go home in my house, you know. And it's the same thing with fish. We build better structures, so the artificial reefs hold more fish.
Yeah.
But anyway, so many fish inshore and offshore right now to go. Spanish mackerel been showing up a little bit.
Bonita are starting to show up just offshore with a few oddball kings and some blackfin tuna and some sailfish a little bit further out. But
yeah, you got to go 35, 40 miles. You got some mahi-mahi, a few blackfin tuna, some sailfish. People forget about that on the west coast of Florida. Right. And we are on the west coast of Florida. If you look at a map, you see Tampa Bay. You look right below that, you'll see a big other bay, and that is Charlotte Harbor. Our studios are right at the head of Charlotte Harbor, right in between the two rivers.
And the thing with those blackfin tuna here that's different about like what people associate the Keys with, you don't catch great numbers of blackfin tuna here, but they average 20 to 25 pounds versus
quality, not quantity.
Yeah, versus in the Keys, it's no big deal to go out and catch 20 or 30 of them, but they're 2 to 3 pounders. So,
yeah.
Eminently larger fish. You know, and like you were saying, Bonita come in close to shore. You know, they stay anywhere from, they'll sometimes come right inside the pass, but they're usually within 5 miles of shore.
I love Bonita fishing. I'm going to go, I'm going to just take a second with that, because you take these little tiny, like a Hopkins spoons, the little tiny ones, like the quarter ounce. If you're throwing the big ounce, 2 ounce ones, you're not catching any fish. You got to throw those little tiny ones on it, and you sit there with a regular spinning rod like you would catching, you know, bass, snook, redfish, whatever, and you zing it out there, rip it right through the school, and boom, when you're hooked up and you got 15, 20, 30 minutes of some of the best fighting you'll ever have.
Absolutely. And you can't miss them because they blitz on the surface out there. I mean, it looks like somebody just turned a jacuzzi on full blast out in the middle of a calm blue water. It's just a white froth on the surface.
And that froth can come up a foot, foot and a half higher than the surrounding water.
Absolutely.
I mean, they get boiling so much, they literally raise the surface of the water where they're in that boil.
And the other cool part is if you're quick enough to get over there, there's sharks move in on them, you know, anywhere from 2-foot sharks all the way up to 10-foot sharks.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. But in the harbor right now, Cale, you're running out doing charters, and you're starting with tarpon going to sharks. Now, what happens on the shark charters? You go out, what do you do to get the sharks up?
You're going to start with chumming, and all chum is ground up fish. Frozen in a nice handy block, you're putting it in a chum bag, sticking it over the side of your boat, and basically making a scent trail for the shark. You know, kind of when you drive by Kentucky Fried Chicken and you go, ooh, that smells good.
Okay, here's my point, though. People always come down and they want to go out and they want to get cow's blood and this and that and the next thing and put it out. And I always tell them, if you're going to chum, you need to chum with what you're fishing for. Because if I'm walking down the street and I smell somebody cooking a steak on a grill, does it make me want a hot dog?
No, it makes you want a steak.
So chum with what you're fishing for.
Right.
And that's what makes everything really work. Chum with fish, crabs, all this other stuff, and have that out for bait. You know, if you're working with chum or fish that's ground up for chum, you want to use fish for bait.
Fish for bait.
And
chum can be used for any fish, not just sharks.
Oh, yeah. We use it on almost everything.
You can use it for redfish. You can use it for snook. You can use it for just about any type of fish that's out there to get them turned on.
I would say every fish out there, because I mean it brings in the food chain. It brings in smaller fish to bigger fish to even bigger fish. I mean, of all species.
Yeah, it's great. Now, guys, we've been kind of just generalizing. We were talking about, you get out there and you put your chum out, you're going to use fish for baits, so we're using fish for chum. What type of tackle are you using? What type of leader do you use? Let's say you've got some 3-foot sharks and you're going to use
3-foot sharks. I'm taking my snook and redfish gear.
Which is basically bass tackle.
Yeah. Bass tackle. I'm taking that 7-foot spinning rod with a 4040 series spinning reel, 15-pound braided line, And, of course, I'm using a steel leader for the shark because they have a tendency to chew through things. And that simple. Those little shark are a blast. Great for kids to catch because it's something that they can handle. And how many kids get to go back to Ohio and say, I caught a shark?
Well, let's not just stop there. I caught a shark. I held a shark.
I held a shark.
I petted a shark.
Right, right.
I've actually got to get it up in the boat. I'm holding it, and you get your pictures with it, and then you put it back in the water. One thing about when you're putting a shark back in the water, there's a little trick to it where you don't get bit.
Yes, you never, ever, ever, ever hold a shark by his tail. And usually when we're holding them, you're holding them by the head and the tail. When you release them, you've got to make sure you let go of that tail first. Every shark can come back and bite its own tail. If you're holding them by the tail, guess what he's biting?
You. Yeah, it works that way. Now, Robert, you're big into sharks, but your sharks, you like the 800-pound, 1,000-pound sharks. What kind of hook leader do you use?
Well, I use, you know, heavier tackle, you know, essentially.
Did I stump you?
Yeah, a little bit.
We're talking about sharks. You knew this was coming.
Right.
Go ahead.
I use what they call a wind-on leader, which essentially I've got my main fishing line, then I've got a heavier monofilament, like similar to what they use for billfish, marlin, and such like that. You know, 300-pound, 150 to 300-pound mono leader, and then I'm only using about anywhere from 24 inches to 4 feet of steel leader. Because, I mean, that's really the only part where I have to worry about them biting me off is in their mouth. So the rest of it rubs up against their body, and I've got the heavy mono for that, which works more than adequate. You know, you and I have been out there and experimented and been destroyed by many, many big fish, and it's all been learning curve over the years.
Well, we went out one time, and we hook about a 20, I'd say 16, 18-foot hammerhead,
mm-hmm.
and they're an amazing fight. And
scary.
I mean, I've got one friend who was 16 hours on the rod before he finally gave up.
Yeah.
16 hours figuring he was going to catch a record and finally ended up giving up and they got as close as they could to the shark and cut him off. I mean, these are some amazing fish. You're talking, it's not uncommon to have a 6-8 hour battle.
Absolutely. You know, it's very scary, you know, when you're doing some of those fish, when you're seeing some of those fish come up to take your bait. It's one of the most exciting, most exhilarating things in the world, but at the same time, it puts you in your place really quickly.
Oh, it's great. What I love about it is you're standing in your boat, and you're out there, and all of a sudden, this fin comes up next to the boat. My gunnels stick up about 18 inches off the surface. They're pretty low on my boat. And all of a sudden, this fin comes up. It comes up 2 feet higher than the gunnels. I'm 5'10". If I put my arm straight out, and this fin would have been that high. Now I'm standing on the side of the boat looking at it, and I'm watching this come up, and I see this big fin, and I see the nose going around my boat. It's 23 feet, 10 inches long, and the tail still at the back. And unconsciously, I kind of realized where I am.
You levitate?
I'm sitting. Yeah, I kind of just moved over. I got one hand on the throttle, the other hand on the steering wheel, and instinctively I'm having to stop myself from slamming that throttle.
Yeah, you see it a lot. I mean, when I'm going out, I'm going with groups of people, and you bring a big shark to the side of the boat, and everybody comes to that side of the boat to watch the shark, and then when it finally comes up and breaks the surface at the side of the boat, you feel the boat rock in the other direction from everybody backing away from the gunwale.
Yeah, it's
because they will make you feel small quickly.
Well, the whole thing is we had all this history. I mean, most everything was shipped by water. We had everything we got from England and from every other country was shipped here by water. And originally, everything was shipped by water here. That's why they built the Erie Canal. That's why Florida's crisscrossed with canals. To this day, everything goes up and down the Mississippi. Well, when you travel by water, what follows boats? Sharks. They're looking for the garbage people dump over, all this stuff. And if you fell in, you were just another piece of garbage that they were likely to get. World War II, everything was weird. So it wasn't until just recently that sharks became kind of this cute, cuddly thing. And you see more and more pictures of people on the beach. They're letting them go live release. And we're going to talk about more of that next week. We got Mallory and Andrew coming on. And it's all about big fish right from land. It's really cool. I mean, this 300-400 pound sharks. This little girl, who's barely 5 feet tall and 100 pounds, walking these fish back into the water by herself. So we got that coming up next week with Mallory and Andrew, and that's going to be really cool. But we're almost out of time on this segment. I don't know where we were or where we were going. Somehow or another, I think we took a left turn to Albuquerque.
That never happens.
Never happens on here. But anyway, oh, hey there. We're back. And we were just talking about there's a tropical storm over on the east coast of Florida, and it's making our fishing actually pretty good because we're getting a lot of nice cloud cover. The temperatures are a lot more mild. We're probably 5 degrees cooler than we were yesterday, so everything's kind of neat down here. Tropical storms don't have to be bad as long as you're not in them.
Right, you know what exactly. I mean?
It's great over here, 150
we,
miles away.
We know
away.
It both ways.
Yeah. We did Charlie. Oh, my goodness. That was interesting. But anyway, and I got Robert in a chair across from me, our big fish expert. Robert's gone out with pretty much every group you can think of, doing research on all the big fish we have down here in Florida. Now, you've fished the Goliath grouper. We can't call them Jewfish because that's politically incorrect. But you fished the Goliath grouper.
So naming them after the bane of the Jewish race is even better.
Yes. I mean, Goliath won this one. So anyway, you go out and you fish for them. What's your biggest one so far, Robert?
Personally landed a 400-pounder. I mean, a solid 400-pounder. It's hard to guess sometimes on a fish that large, but realistically, it was good 400.
It was realistically 400 pounds. I was there holding his belt, keeping him in the boat.
Yeah. So what's it like when you hook up on one of these 400, 600-pound fish? I mean, because your fish could have been 400 or 500 pounds.
Yeah.
I think you're being light. I'm going to give you closer to 5 than 4. I've seen a lot of... When I first moved to Florida, we'd go out, catch them, and bring them in, fillet them, and eat them. You know, I mean... But then they went endangered. Now, we are one of the areas in the world that has an overpopulation of them.
Right.
We just have more than what we need, more than what's good for our area, actually. They are actually... I've watched Goliath grouper on the video and in person eat fish at the surface. The most surprising one was a Goliath came up and sucked down a 4-foot shark whole, live, on somebody's rod.
Yeah.
And it was just... All of a sudden, there's a shark fighting on the line, and the next thing you know, ba-whoosh! And the shark's gone, and the grouper's swimming back down. Can you imagine what kind of stomach something's got in order to eat
like
a
that.
4-foot shark
without
live?
Without a problem, and whole.
Live and whole, yeah, yep. Just one bite, gulp, a 4-foot
like
shark
is gone.
It's like a
cast iron stomach? I mean, how do they do that without having their stomach line torn to pieces? I mean, you and I have talked about it.
I don't even want to eat it. I can't eat any. I'm not going to. I mean, I've eaten live stuff when I was young, you know, goldfish and stuff like that. That was weird enough. But to eat a 4-foot shark whole,
right.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Crazy stomach contents.
I love fishing for them, though. It's you go get the biggest, baddest, strongest guy you can find, and you make them make funny noises.
Yeah, like, in the meantime, he's slammed down to his knees. He's up against the gunwale, and all you're looking at him and going, don't let go of the rod.
Yeah.
Don't let go of the rod. That's a $500 reel and a $300 rod. Don't
Please
let go
don't
of it. You
that.
Owe me $800. Yeah. You know? They're just looking at you, but I can't hold on. Sorry.
See that cranky thing on the side of the reel? Try turning it, would you please?
Yes, turn that way.
The amazing part about that fish, too, is that we catch them in our canals, the middle of the harbor. We catch them in 4 feet of water all the way up to 150 feet of water.
Yeah, we've sat in your backyard and caught 20 and 30 pounders from land.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to say in the canals, they're going to max out about 50. Occasionally, you'll get one over there. But 30 to 50 pounds in the canals, in the middle of the harbor, going 80 to 100, 150. But once you get out to Boca, now we're talking about you get... You know, small ones at 100 pounds, you get big ones up to 200, maybe 300. After that, they're pretty much out in the Gulf. They're in that,
right.
They're going to hit 30, 40 feet of water, and you're going to find 200 to 400s as you go further out, they're even bigger.
Yeah, you'll find 1 and 2 pounders in our mangroves. This is where they raise their young. Again, we're not just a nursery for sharks. We're a nursery for just about everything.
Oh, I love going down by Jug Creek, and I'll take a little paddle tail, something like the rototail type thing. I just work that shallow flat across there, and they hit just like you would expect a bass to.
Right.
You're just going across, bringing that lure back right across the top of the weeds, and all of a sudden, bam, and you've got a Goliath grouper or a gag grouper or a ladyfish or trout. It's just so cool working these different lures across those flats.
Yeah. It's impressive as all get-go.
You sound impressed. You said, I mean, could you get any more excited, Robert?
that's just me. Sorry.
I know. I'm sitting here today going, okay, we're really excited about the show today. So anyway. I mean,
the Goliath grouper, it's such a phenomenal fish to catch. You know,
what's the minimum line you can use weight-wise to expect to catch a 400-pounder?
80-pound test.
Okay, now...
I'm not one of those ones that... See, there's one particular place here where everyone seems to go and target them, and they all think they have to have 400-pound test line to get them out because they're literally pulling the fish out with the boat and then reeling them up. And yes, it's a struggle because it's 400 pounds or 200 pounds on the end of your rod.
And I'm all about that. I'm backing the boat down. I'm using the boat and the rod and the reel and the person. As long as I got somebody to hold the person that's holding the rod that's pulling the fish. Sure. Because one person just ain't going to do it.
Sure.
So,
but it can be done with lighter line. You get broke off just as much on the 80-pound as you do the 400-pound. They pull you in the structure. I've watched guys do it out there.
Now, Kale, do you do any Goliath charters? You go out here right by the phosphate dock and do them.
Go out by the phosphate dock this time of the year. They're in the deep holes of the harbor. They're in some of our inshore reefs ready to breed. Most of the time, we do go out to the phosphate dock. And
throughout the winter, you can catch them anywhere inside. This time of year, a lot of your bigger ones start to move offshore because of the spawn.
Right. Okay, guys, thanks for listening this week. This is Fish and Frank in the chair here, and I'm Fish and Franks. Go to fishandfranks.com, no G in Southern Fishing. Robert in the chair across from me, Captain Kale from Real Bad Fish Charters. You can check his website for that stuff. Great guy. Go out fishing with him, or he can go out fishing with you. A lot of different things you can do. But this is Fish and Franks, and we'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much for listening.